Hello and welcome to the QA Therapy podcast. Are you looking to improve your overall testing and quality practices? My name is Sergio Freire and I'm a solution architect and a testing advocate at X-Ray.
And my name is Cristiano Cunha and I'm also a solution architect and test advocate. And we'll be your hosts and QA therapists throughout this series. In this podcast, we're going to tackle some of the most common testing and quality challenges that we all face in our teams. So if this sounds good to you, keep on listening. Testing has been evolving. Some may have not noticed it, but we are not testing the same way as we did years ago, where we delegated testing to some team members, you know, the testers, that will test those items after they were implemented. We really have come a long way from there. We now test perhaps more and broader, different quality attributes, and we also look at testing in a more holistic way. But what does that mean exactly? Well, to assist us with this topic, we have a special guest with us. It's Janet Gregory. But before welcoming her, let's look at what is bringing you here. What are the symptoms that you may have been feeling that has brought you to listen to this podcast? So ask yourself, is testing delegated to some team members? Are developers not involved in testing? Or is testing done only after features are implemented? Are we testing only the obvious or just testing at the UI level? Or even, are we not looking at production? And lastly, are we not incorporating feedback from production into product development?
All these are symptoms that we are missing the true depth of testing, and that we don't understand how important it is to embrace testing together as a team, continuously, in the whole software development, operation, and maintenance lifecycle. This means looking at it not only from a more agile perspective, but also from a more holistic kind of approach. Let's dive a bit into this topic. And today we have here with us Janet Gregory, our expert QA therapist, to assist on diagnosis and prescription on these symptoms related to testing in a more holistic perspective. Janet is a frequent speaker on conferences and has published several books, namely around agile testing. And together with Lisa Crisping, both manage the Agile Testing Fellowship, a community of practitioners around agile and holistic testing. And also, she won a prize recently on a conference that we were last year. Congrats for that, Janet. Welcome. Are you comfortable on our QA therapy couch?
I am certainly comfortable on our couch. I've never been called a QA therapist before. It's kind of interesting. But yes, I am.
That's great. Let's start our podcast with the first question. And all starts with quality. We want to pursue quality, but what is that, to be precise? Is it something that we can measure with fine precision, that we can highly detail?
There's a couple of things in that question, because it's interesting, because Lisa Crispin and I just published a blog post yesterday on quality from the different from different perspectives.
I know.
It kind of only, you know, it only covers like a small portion of it. I know that a lot of people try to say, here's how you measure quality. But I don't think that's an easy answer there, because it, depending on who you are and how you're looking at it, you will have a completely different answer. So is there one measure? I'm not sure that it can be put down into one sentence. It sounds too easy that way.
I remember,
qualitative, right?
Yeah, I remember your example. I think you have an example around coffee.
I use that a lot, actually, in my talks.
If you want to detail it a bit to our listeners.
Okay. So when I talk about coffee, when I do it as a talk, I hold up three pictures of coffee. One is just a plain cup of black coffee. One is a cappuccino, looks really nice. And then one as maybe a cappuccino with really pretty design on. I haven't talked about things like espressos or any of those others. And I just put up the three pictures and I say, which do you like best? And people choose. And it depends, right? Myself, I like a plain black cup of coffee. I'm not an espresso fan. But my sister, she always chooses the cappuccino. And some people will pay, you know, $5 for that or euros. And some people don't want to pay that. They want to pay a dollar in their store to get it. Not that you can buy a cup of coffee anymore for a dollar. But it's based on their taste sometimes. But so I asked my sister one time, I said, so tell me, how did you judge that was the best cup of coffee? And her explanation was all about the ambiance of her favorite coffee shop. And I said, you know, you haven't even touched the cup of coffee. And so what it really did was emphasized that how do we judge quality? Because a cup of coffee is a good cup of coffee, if you have to ask a connoisseur kind of thing. We'll talk about the coffee, how it was grown, how it was planted, how it was picked, how it was roasted, right? Yeah. Some people like medium blend, some people like dark, some people, there's different kinds. And so much goes into making that coffee that us as a consumer don't think about. We just want that cup of coffee. For me, it's the caffeine in the morning, right? And I don't care as much about the taste as long as it's not bitter.
In that case, it's about the need, right?
It's about And so for me, I drink coffee to get my brain working in the morning. It's a means to an end.
Yeah, it's all about context, experience that exactly. You have, and expectation also, what will provide you. Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you judge that quality of a cup of coffee?
Yeah. Unless you give them a set of rules that you have to follow.
Exactly.
And, and define, unless it's too open. Well, I have another question. I know that you have been helping a lot of agile teams around the world. Mm-hmm. So how have you been framing agile testing in a way that it distinguishes itself from the old non-agile kind of things?
Well, when Lisa and I wrote our three books, we called it agile testing. And one of the tenets of the base is that it involves the whole team. It's not testers sitting somewhere testing the product or the software, depending on what they're doing. But it's the whole team. So that was our differentiation, the most, mm-hmm. The basic, right? How do you collaborate together to build that quality in? And so that's what we meant when we started talking about agile testing. In 30 words or less.
Yeah, really, 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 really short. Yeah, and I think that testing has also shifted towards quality, because before we only listened about, mm-hmm. I'm going to test this feature, this software, this application. Now we are shifting towards quality, and quality, like you said, is on by everyone, yeah.
And then you came from... you had this, you framed this concept around agile testing and more recently holistic testing. And before actually we go into it in a bit more detail, how is it related with agile testing and why, how did it appear?
How did it appear? Well, agile testing for years, because we've been talking about agile testing since, I don't know, 2001 or something. Lisa and I have been 2002. And we talked about agile testing because it was new and a lot of people hadn't heard about that kind of testing. When agile first came out, they didn't talk about testers. So we were really trying to raise that awareness. In the last couple of years, we didn't feel the need to keep that phrasing because so many teams are just doing agile. People coming out of university don't know what waterfall means. They just haven't even seen it. So the differentiation isn't there as much. Mm-hmm. So we wanted a different word that's still used all of the concepts, like it's still the same concepts, but it's more meaningful to people. So we started talking about holistic testing, which is really the same thing, but it just makes more sense in today's world. Because a lot of people have, you know, said agile's not a real thing anymore, or they've had bad experiences and they don't want to use that word. So holistic testing is something that people can use without fear. It can apply to any methodology that your team is using, right? We use the infinite loop to kind of show where that goes and kind of redevelop that to help us explain what we mean. So I think that's been helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We saw that you have been reframing the DevOps infinite loop, adding some things onto it to redefine to show what holistic testing is all about. Can you go a little bit over that? What is the model? How it comes to that? Well, briefly, of course, because it will
briefly,
it will take you all the time, I know, but just briefly.
Okay. So the typical DevOps model had testing as a phase in there. And it bothered me a lot. And then Dan Ashby came up with his continuous testing model. Mm-hmm. We test here, here, and here. Love that. But it wasn't quite right in my mind either. So I played with it a while and ended up with starting that infinite loop kind of thing with discovery. Where do we start when we first get a feature? Thinking about the planning and the understanding before we ever start. And I think that's where Dan's loop missed a little bit. He didn't mm-hmm. have that. He started getting into too much detail. I still like it, still love that. But what do we do and how do we test at those early stages, right? In our feature development, right? Yeah. The building part is actually kind of the smallest chunk. If we understand what we're building, if we've done our due diligence and we think about it, and I don't mean planning up front, doing requirements documentation, right? This can be in little chunks. Once we build it, we deploy it, we're able to test more there. And that's where a lot of the quality attributes kind of get tested because we have it on an environment. As we release to production, mm-hmm. what kinds of testing can we think about there? As production is that customers are using it. Testing is listening to the customers. We're observing, right? We're testing our understanding of how the customers use it. And then we learn from it. And I think the learning is how do we get better? And then it's that continue. So it's a kind of almost a continuous improvement loop as well, right?
Yeah.
And so between each of those, I don't want to call them phases, I call them kind of stages, mm-hmm. is just pause and reflect, not gates. You know, do we really understand what we want to build? Yeah, you know what? We've got too many outstanding questions. Let's go get some more answers, right? Those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So that's kind of it in a
nutshell.
I was going to ask you, when should we do testing and the kind of testing that we should perform at any given moment? But I think you already kind of answer it, right? Because testing also shifts depending on where you are on that infinite loop.
Oh, absolutely. So I don't use the word, and a lot of people do, they say software testing. And I've kind of eliminated that from my vocabulary. I just call it testing or testing the product. correct, right? Mm-hmm. Because when you're testing in the early stages, like thinking about it and the planning, you're addressing risks. You're addressing your assumptions.
Ideas.
Exactly. You're testing early. And it's not only about testing software. So I think it's how do we frame what we think of as testing?
Yeah. And I totally agree with you. It's not only about product anymore, because with DevOps and holistic testing, you bring things into the game that were not there before. But now you are, for me, I'm starting to use testing systems, because the whole system, it's end up to be, even the process of putting things into production needs to be have that level of quality that we need. And we have something to say about it because we use it every day and we can improve it every day. So yeah, for me, that shift, that continuous words that start to appear, and that shift that we did towards quality of the whole system is really, really what has changed in my mind from those times until now.
Yeah, I agree. I like that, testing systems. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you talked about holistic testing. It's quite similar to agile testing. So we can assume that, well, who is most involved in this holistic testing? Is it still the testers? I know the answer, but can you go over it a little bit?
I think if we think that testing is owned by testers, we limit what we can do. So in the discovery stage, for example, it's not even anybody on the delivery team. It's likely marketing people or execs thinking about, do we need to do this feature? Does it add value to our product or to our system, right? So if they think that they're testing the value or the idea at that stage, we're involving them in the solution as well, right? Yeah. As we go through that loop, when you're thinking about risks or assumptions, if you don't involve the programmers and the product owner or who's ever the domain experts, you're doing yourself a disservice because you're missing things, right? So one of my favorite questions to ask a product owner or who's ever there is, what is the biggest risk, right? To the product, to our system. And that will help identify what kind of testing we need to think about. What do we need to build in to make our system robust, for example? And so if we don't think about that whole team and expand it, I think we do a disservice to our company that we work with.
While we were talking, something was resonating on my mind, because I was thinking that sometimes we talk about testing, but we call it something else. So sometimes we are doing like brainstorming of ideas for the project. Mm-hmm. Basically, we are discussing, we are iterating, we are testing our ideas and discussing them with the team. We just call it something else, like brainstorming or... but it's this notion that at a given moment we can provide value by discussing things together as a team, by exposing risks. I think it's really helpful to prevent them beforehand.
And risks is a really good example. If we don't have that conversation early, how are we ever going to know what to test? Or what to address when we're building.
Yeah. One of the best discussions I had with my previous team was try to define what is quality for the team. Yes. Because it starts to bring all of those concerns from all of the different roles and try to address different risks at different times, at different purpose. And at least we have all, we start to shape what is quality for us, for the product, for the company, for the team. Mm-hmm. And that has helped. So a little bit joined in that concept of holistic testing.
It's a good conversation to have. And sometimes teams don't even know how to start that.
Yeah.
Right.
Or to end that conversation. Sometimes
it's... Or to end.
Yeah, I like the actions.
Oh, I know. So my latest book is one with Selena DeLisi, and it's on assessing quality practices for agile teams. And our first three kind of quality aspects we talk about are not about the software at all or about the process. It's about your culture, the feedback loops, and how do you even address getting improvements done, right? They're social aspects. And I think that if we don't talk about some of those things as we talk about quality, it's going to hurt us too, yeah. Right? So many things.
Janet, you mentioned, and you have been mentioning it a few times, about this aspect of building quality in. And we know that sharing, or at least some of us know that increasing shared understanding is crucial for that. But exactly how can we increase that shared understanding? And you already touched some points, but if you can elaborate a bit.
I think part of it is making things visible, right? So if you're brainstorming and doing a mind map, if everybody can see what you're thinking about, people will generate more ideas. If you do something like discussing, if we're slicing stories, whether it's story mapping or drawing a flow diagram to say, this is what I think the feature is going to look like, and you start talking about it, you can start testing those ideas by saying, you know what? We didn't think about this. What about this? What happens here? Making it visible in whatever shape that looks like for your team, I think is kind of one of the first steps, thinking about getting that shared understanding. When it's visible, you can see it. You can talk about it. You can critique it, which is kind of why I like models and things, because people can see it. If you're just talking, it goes in one ear and then kind of falls out the other sometimes.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a really a very interesting point, because even from my previous experience in the past, so we had visibility in some projects, we had visibility up to a certain point, but doing those exercises where we could visualize stuff, we would visualize models, visualize flows, they were limited because we are not used to that. But reflecting a bit about that insight, it would be really helpful for us to before we even start implementing stuff, or even for analyzing problems afterwards, after they appear, because sometimes there's no clear understanding about the whole picture or parts of the system.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things I see is teams solving a symptom versus what is the real problem, right? So a person can actually go back to, you know, the fish diagram, if you want to, the fishbone diagram, ishi, kawa, whatever that is, for you know, looking at those things, making it visible again. Whatever tool you use.
Yeah. And with this, well, these new tendencies with DevOps, holistic testing, and infinite loop that we have, we see this everything needing more velocity. We need to put things faster in production. So we need to invest in automation, to invest in automated checks or tests, whatever people are calling it now. Do you think that and this is sometimes a struggle for the teams, because they didn't have that, now they need to have it, so they start to have automation test engineers that are dedicated to that. So what's the best way to help those teams having those checks, and who should be responsible by it? The testers, automation testers, that should be a deliverable from the developers. So it's a little bit all over the place, depending on the team. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, and it depends on the team, right? Yeah. It does. My favorite way when I was working on teams and working with them is to use the skills that the team has. So who programs the very best? Who knows how to code the very best? It's the programmers. That's what they're good at. From an the very best testers I have seen are really good at thinking of tests, the what we need to test for. So the collaboration, again, to me makes the best sense. So testers working with the programmers, let the programmers write the tests, let them automate them, but in conjunction with the testers. That also makes it part of the responsibility as the team. It's not these people own it. The team owns it. They work together. And that's where I've seen my biggest successes, is them working together. If it's an automation person, and I can't say engineer because in Canada we're not allowed to, the automation person, if they're off doing their own thing, they have no vested interest in what's happening with that story, with that feature. They're just chunking out code. They've become coders.
Yeah.
They're not part of the team. And that's one of my biggest fears. So one team I was on, we had to bring in automation people because we didn't have the skills. And we were just moving to Agile, so the programmers weren't there. So those automation people set the stage, they set it. But what we ended up doing was bringing it into the team. The team took it over, and eventually those automation people went off somewhere else, mm-hmm. or they became part of the team. So they chose different routes. But bring it, have the team own it. That is the most, that's where you get your sustainability.
Exactly, yeah.
I remember you used this analogy about building quality in and then figure out if we got it right in production or not and adapt. So what's the role of observability and monitoring here?
Well, different people have different, and I've had lots of conversations about this, but observability. So if you've put in the telemetry or the instrumentation into your code, if you've put it in, if you've thought about it early and put it into your code, then the tools now that exist allow you to look at what's happening. Some of them go to me a little bit scary into Big Brother watching, right? Yeah. But generally speaking, if you're trying to solve a problem and you're trying to figure out, are our customers even using this new feature, right? Can mm-hmm. we tell that? And then you can find out, why aren't they using this feature? Only 1 out of 10 is using this feature. Is it because we didn't need it? Did we make it too complicated? Right? Because then you can start figuring out what the problem is. And that to me is what observability is about, trying to figure it out. The monitoring is, of course, can we find our errors quickly? Those sorts of things too. So there's a difference, but yeah.
Janet, and let me going back to that, to your answer and to the same question, but are we prepared for the answers that we can have from that? So if we find out that we made a feature, if the teams find out mm-hmm. that they have made a feature and the feature is not really that useful, are they prepared to handle that? Do you see, can that be a challenge? Because I see sometimes some teams, and I've been in some of those teams, people, teams doing some feature which is amazing, but some of us may think, maybe someone doesn't use that. Maybe most of the users don't use that. And then can it be challenging to deconstruct that?
Yeah. And it is a challenge. One of my favorite, so the word MVP, the acronym MVP, right? Mm-hmm. Most viable, minimum viable product. Was used, I heard it all the time a few years ago. I hear it less these days. But the term learning release resonates with me. And that was from Ardita, her last name skips me right now, from the Toronto area. And she talked about a learning release. And that made sense to me. So if we have a new feature and we're not sure that our customers are going to use it. What is the minimum we can put out to say, hey, customers, do you like this? Can we learn from this? And then you can go on to develop it to be what is actually needed or wanted. And if that learning release goes out and the customers say, this is stupid, we haven't invested a whole lot into that feature, right? And I think that's really what that learning is all about, rather than thinking we know it all, because we don't.
Yeah, yeah. And we have with this DevOps and now the ability to look at what's happening in production. And that's
exactly
things that everyone needs to learn about, because that responsibility is now responsibility of the team.
Yes.
So you also include learn as an item within that infinite loop. And I think it's a really important one, but we don't see that often. It's kind of assumed. So how do you advise to introduce that? Because sometimes learning, you have to do it on your own time because it's not defined. But we are always learning new things. We're shifting to Agile, we're shifting to DevOps, new tools, new models. So what's your advice on that?
So I think there's different levels of learning. So the learning release would be from a product perspective, right? Learning our customers use it is kind of a different thing. But then learning ourselves. So if we look at, and we do retrospectives on a regular basis, and we say, you know what, we missed these things in production. How did we miss them? Why did we as a team not consider these things? And look at it to say, what can us as individuals, what can us as a team, but what can each of us as individuals do to try to avoid that the next time, right? So it might be that we missed testing one of the biggest risks. So from a learning perspective, it might be from me to say, not that I have this problem now, but it might make me as being more courageous. I need to ask better questions. I need to ask them earlier, right? And I had a hard time with it for a very long time speaking up. I don't have that problem anymore. But I think it goes down the layers is, here's the bigger problem, but what can we, and come down to the individual and learning. There's no easy way to do it. It's just making it part of, let's talk about it. Let's make it visible. Let's make, and this is where that cultural aspect, let's make it safe.
Yeah, yeah.
For people to learn.
Yeah. And to speak up. So that's.
That yeah. too. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So if our listeners want to learn more about holistic testing, they can go to.
Lisa and I have written blog posts on our agiletestingfellow.com. Also on my own blog post I've written, which is janetgregory.ca, CA for Canada. And I've written blog posts on it. I'm pretty easy to find anywhere. So if you Google me, there'll be a contact and you can send me an email and I would be happy to share.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for being here with us, Janet, and helping us uncover holistic testing and how it can help teams pursue better quality, whatever that quality may mean to whoever.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing your therapy couch with me.
Before ending our episode, it's time for some vitamins. We know that in general, they are good for our health. In this case, we will be talking about vitamin X, where X stands for X-ray. With X-ray, you can adopt a more agile and holistic testing approach, allowing you to start by clarifying the user stories and highlight the risks around them. The team can then devise different types of tests and link them with the stories, and use Jira as the single source of truth for tracking the results and the outcomes. Teams may decide to use test points per sprint or per different criteria. Tests may be specified upfront or during the sprint. Test plans don't need to be strict. They can highlight the goals so the team can decide exactly how to address the related testing. Some of the tests may be automated, while others may be performed in a more exploratory way. Also, teams can use all sorts of testing frameworks and tools to assist them. And everyone can collaborate during test planning, execution, debriefing, and reporting, using the tool they are used to in their daily activities, which for most of you will be Jira.
And we're reaching to the end. And let's see what we have talked about and learned in this episode. We saw that giving power to the teams so that they can decide how to implement the testing process and adapt to their needs is crucial in an agile world, the world that we look for. And this is also about looking at testing in a more holistic way. In this episode, we learn more about agile and holistic testing and how that is embracing testing continuously by all the team members before, during, and after we build our software products.
So see you in our next therapy session. Happy testing!
Happy testing!